Blue 20! Blue 20!
It's intentional grounding. Chicago's best Bears breakdown and analysis.
Ice up, son.
Now, they are WGN Radio's very own Adam Hogue and the Chicago Sun-Times' Adam Johns.
Welcome in episode 18 of Intentional Grounding. 18 episodes already. Crazy to think about that. Back in the basement this week, Adam Hogue, Adam Johns. Follow us on Twitter. At Adam Hogue, H-O-G-E, at Adam Johns, J-A-H-N-S. You can submit questions for the podcast there. And we're on the web at WGNradio.com/Bears, ChicagoSunTimes.com. Find the podcast on iTunes by searching Intentional Grounding on iTunes and subscribe there. Leave a review, rate it. We appreciate you doing that. And we're on SoundCloud at SoundCloud.com/WGNRadioSports. Our producer is Mike Jacobson. So, Adam, it's been a few days since the Bears beat the Packers,
yeah.
but I think it's by far the biggest win of the season. And really, when you look at the direction of this franchise the last few years, it's a very significant win. It means more than just one W that goes in.
No, absolutely. We are closing in on, a week since Thanksgiving. But the Bears, when we met them Monday at Halisaw, they weren't ready to flip the switch yet.
No.
Turn the page, whatever you want to use there, insert the cliche. It's still... It was so important to them. It was personal. It was emotional. They took Aaron Rodgers' comments from week one where he said he loves beating the Bears to heart. I don't know if they spread it around the locker room or what, but it was in the back of their minds. Pernell McPhee mentioned it. It meant a lot to the Bears. It was a signature win for John Fox in his first season. And the Bears, they're kind of red hot right now.
And let's take a second to brag, because I think we need to do it. I know there's not many Bears podcasts out there, but this is the only one that predicted that the Bears would win. Both of us did.
Even better, you got your bold prediction. Right?
I did. The interception of Brett Favre from Tracy Porter.
You got the player right, which is the most impressive thing.
Yeah, and I'm looking to go 2 for 2 this week. I got an interesting bold prediction we'll get to later on as we talk about the San Francisco 49ers coming to Soldier Field. But you're right. This win was personal to the Bears. And I was kind of joking around, and maybe you did talk me into it a little bit in picking the Bears last week. But let's go behind the scenes a little bit. We discussed recording our podcast last week before everyone talked at Halas Hall that day.
Yeah.
Because of the short week, we recorded it at Halas, and we were kind of trying to decide when we should do it. We decided to hold off until everything was done for the day in terms of interviews, and the Kevin White news was coming out. So that's what we did. And honestly, I think if we had recorded before the locker room was open, I may have picked the Packers to win.
Yeah.
But it was what was said in that room that day that really started to turn me. When you have a guy like Alshon Jeffrey come out and start guaranteeing things, somebody who never says anything.
He used the word guarantee.
Yeah, he used the word guarantee. He didn't guarantee a win, but he guaranteed a different outcome from last year when they got completely blown out. And you heard from other guys in that room that clearly were starting to motivate themselves based on things that were being said by the Packers, just the overall results in recent years. And that showed up immediately on the field. And I think in retrospect, Mike McCarthy made a mistake by going for it on fourth down on that first drive.
Yeah. And even having Brett Favre night.
Yeah.
The homecoming. You're talking about what players were saying? At Lambeau Field in that locker room, I must have heard the word homecoming a dozen times from different players. It was a ring of honor night for Brett Favre. He got his number retired, but apparently someone at Halas Hall called it a homecoming. I'm guessing it was John Fox, and that resonated with the players, and they were ready to share that message, you know, to the masses after they beat them.
And you mentioned that yesterday at Halas Hall, the players were still kind of talking about it. Pernell McPhee was very vocal yesterday in his comments, talking about Aaron Rodgers, talking about the Packers. This is what Pernell McPhee had to say at Halas Hall.
This game going in was personal. Come on. Quarterback said he loved beating up on us. Who we think we are? We ain't the team last year, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. You know what I'm saying? It's 2015 Chicago. And a lot of guys take it personal, especially when somebody say, oh, I love beating up on your brother. I ain't going to let nobody come beat my little brother up. And, you know, we went in there and we slapped them on his ass. They need to go ask them how that feel.
Purnell's the best. Yeah. I mean, in terms of sound bites, and he's been an emotional leader from the very beginning this season. Voted as a captain, even though he's new to the team, and you could see right there that he didn't really enjoy losing to the Packers.
You just love the bravado, you know, the macho-ness. I mean, this is. We use what we always say. These are alpha males. These guys call themselves warriors. They love having that warrior mentality. And this is a guy who embodies all of that and is willing to exude all of that, share all of that, that personality. I mean, this defense had no personality the past couple of years. This guy brings it, not only with his words, but the way he plays, with the nastiness. And there's players that are, yes, they're buying into it. They're showing it themselves. Guys like Lamar Houston, guys like Tracy Porter, guys like Willie Young, even Shane McClellan are getting in line with Purnell McPhee, who's bringing this brashness, this boldness, this identity that the Bears need.
All right, well, let's jump into this game and kind of look at it. So we hand out our awards, and there's a number of them to give out this week.
Player of the game.
This was a little bit of a tougher decision this week when you consider how well that defense played. Mm-hmm. I had a number of guys grade out very positively, some of the best marks of the entire season, and it starts in that secondary. But first, I want to also mention that Willie Young played another great game.
Yeah.
Four in a row now, and this was his best game. Willie Young is earning more playing time. He may not want to call himself an outside linebacker, but he's starting to play how I thought he could. I always said, going back in the offseason, I thought his skills could translate to a 3-4. Might not be ideal, but I didn't rule him out as someone that can contribute in Vic Fangio's defense. And as soon as he started getting healthy, and you could tell, and maybe that trade deadline helped too, getting, you know, passing and just knowing that, hey, you're going to be with this team, he's played really well the last 4 weeks.
What's impressed me about him, and I marked it down a couple times watching the game, and then I went back and watched the film and saw, or confirmed what I saw, his ability to recognize his pass coverage assignments. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was rushing, stopped his rush, and covered, whether it's a tight end breaking off his block or a running back, James Starks, maybe coming out of the backfield. And look, he's not going to chase these guys around for 4 or 5 seconds. But he did enough to interrupt Aaron Rodgers' reads, to get his long hands, his long arms in his way to stop his field of vision, where that running back or that tight end no longer became an option, at least for those 2 seconds, and made Rodgers look elsewhere. Very impressive. But if you're going to talk about Willie Young, you got to mention Lamar Houston.
Yeah,
because he is very, very good. Maybe his best game as a Bear yet. I mean, last year, just forget last year. That, you know, this year, these past couple weeks especially, he has really turned it on. He's got 5 sacks, I think, this year. He's just tied Purnell McPhee for the team lead.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive.
It is, considering some of the lack of snaps he's received this season. To have that many sacks is good. But, all right, mention player of the game. Willie Young was not my highest graded player as well as he played. I just wanted to make sure I mentioned him. Neither was Chris Prezinski, but Chris Prezinski was also very highly graded. He played a tremendous game, very impressive for somebody that just got thrown out there
career
2 weeks ago.
Teamer, yeah.
But Tracy Porter, for the second week in a row, was my player of the game. This guy is playing, really, he's playing at a Pro Bowl level.
Yeah,
he is. And those plays he made last week on the ball against the Packers, just the kind of plays that the Bears have not had against Aaron Rodgers. And they had a couple of close calls in week one. If you remember, Alan Ball guarding James Jones and didn't necessarily have horrible coverage, but there were 50-50 balls that James Jones won.
Yeah.
The 50-50 balls were won by the Bears on Thursday. That was the biggest difference in the game. It wasn't just Porter, although he had at least 3 or 4 passes swatted away. Kyle Fuller also played well, and Bryce Callahan had one of the biggest roller coaster games I've ever seen. I think I had him down for 7 good plays and 7 bad plays. He was all over the map, but when it counted, he got the pass defense on the last play of the game.
Well, he had a tough assignment, and Randall Cobb a lot in the slot. That's not an easy cover for any nickelback. I mean, the guy's a heck of a player, Randall Cobb is. That pass breakup Tracy Porter had, and he is my player of the game, too, in the end zone of James Jones was exceptional. I mean, that was a scramble alert play by Aaron Rodgers where he just sort of threw it up and talking about 50-50 balls. That was in James Jones' hands. But you know what? Tracy Porter's hand was there too.
Yep.
His first interception, which was overturned, which he got called back for just a soft legal contact penalty.
Terrible call.
You know, his coverage on that out and up by James Jones, I thought was exceptional. I mean, he not only impeded his route, but with the route to really jump an underthrown ball by Aaron Rodgers to make the interception. Just a really impressive day all around from him. And you're right, he is playing like a Pro Bowler. This is just not 1 week. These are several good weeks he's strung in a row now.
Well, since you brought up that penalty on Tracy Porter, let me just take this.
Here we go,
quick
official time.
Just a horrendous officiated game. So you had those two. The first one on Porter was, at least there was contact. I thought it was initiated by the wide receiver, not him, but at least there was contact. The one that wiped out the interception, there wasn't even contact. I don't even know. I watched the All-22. There was
minimal.
I mean, it was like his hand touched his shoulder, but it wasn't illegal contact. That was a bad call. The Eddie Lacy 25-yard touchdown, I thought live that Jonathan Anderson may have been blocked in the back. Rewatching it, I think he was. It was sort of debatable. It was kind of back and on the side, shoulder, backside of the shoulder. Probably a block in the back, though. If you don't want to call it, fine. When I saw the All-22, Tracy Porter got held so badly by Jeff Janis, I have no idea how they missed it. He tried to separate from the block, and Janis pulled him.
I know how they missed it. The officiating has been awful all year long, but go ahead.
But it went both ways. The pick play they called on the Packers was a bad call. Mm-hmm. I didn't think that was a good call. The play where Marquise Wilson was clearly down at the one-yard line. My seat in the press box just happened to be at the goal line, so I had the same view as the referee, except 200 feet away, and I saw that live. Like, it was such an easy call, and he called it a touchdown. They overturned it, but I don't even know why that needed to be, why it was called incorrectly in the first place. The tripping call on Matt Slauson was brutal.
Yeah.
He was just blocking and fell down. Let's see. I got a pass interference. Now I can't read my own handwriting, but there was another pass interference. The Goodson one on Alshon Jeffrey, I thought was a bad call. That one went against the Packers. And then they also missed.
I think Mike McCarthy bemoaned those the other day, 2 days ago.
And he had a right to. I think both head coaches had a right to complain about the officiate, as I'm sure they did. And also one last key one, the last first down the Packers had on their final drive. Mm-hmm. Which ended up not mattering because the Bears stopped him. But the play clock was at 0 on 3rd and 7. It was clearly at 0.
Oh, yeah. No, I remember
it
that live.
It should have been a delay game. Yeah. They didn't call it. And Rodgers got the first down. So, I mean, that's a long list of mistakes for an officiating crew to have in one game.
Do you feel better?
I feel a lot better.
Adam,
I've been holding on to that for like 5 days.
It's a lot of notes. If I could illustrate or just paint you a picture, people, he has this notebook that he just pulled out. And it is full of scratches and marks, like you said, he can't read his own. I can't read it either. His own handwriting, but Adam Hoge loves to evaluate his officiating, and you know what? It's not just this past game. If you watch the Sunday games, this Monday night game, this is a bad trend for officials. I don't know what's going on with them, but it's been horrendous. I don't know if we just have more video to evaluate these things, but it's been pretty bad.
And I believe there's a report today that Pete Morelli's crew is getting taken off the Monday night game next week.
I saw that maybe they weren't assigned to it, or maybe they're just not going to be considered for it.
This is exactly why they are quiet about who's reffing which games, and it doesn't really get announced. Because if they do make changes, they don't want people to know about it.
Yep.
And so this helps. Sometimes the teams will know, and they'll know if a change is made. But that was an interesting report today. About time some accountability has been thrown out there by the league. However, I wonder if it wasn't the Monday night game, would it even happen? You know, if it's a noon game on Sunday, would they bother to change it?
Yeah.
All right, let's move on and keep talking about this one.
Worst player on the field.
Any of the Packers wide receivers?
Well, Devontae Adams was brutal.
He was awful.
Brutal.
Yeah, he's got to be the guy.
I mean, this is a high-round draft pick. What's he doing? This is Aaron Rodgers.
Catch the ball.
He's supposed to make you look better, and you're making him look worse.
The only wide receiver I saw play worse this week was Demaryius Thomas on the Broncos.
He had one big catch at the end there, but yeah. At points in that snow.
I mean, when you're going like 1 for 11, and you're an elite wide receiver, that's pretty bad.
That's not elite at all. That's Devontae Adams, like,
If we're going to talk about Bears players, though, I don't think it's bad enough to make a change, considering he's your rookie third-round pick. Hronis Grasue got his butt whooped in that game. It was bad. he was consistently pushed backwards. Sometimes he was able. I think he was able. He was able to hold off enough that Cutler wasn't running for his life always.
Yeah.
But a lot of times in the run blocking, he was getting blown up in the middle, and that was causing some of those runs to get shut down.
You know what? I think a lot of the. Speaking of disappointment, if there was any sense of that in the Bears locker room after John Fox was done dancing with them, it was amongst the offensive linemen. They looked well. They're happy. Let's be clear, but a little down on their luck. It looked like, especially Charles Leno and Hieronis Grissou. And I saw John Fox made sure to come over and at least hug them and you know give them a sense of confidence or give them a few words.
Are you talking about Grissou?
Grissou.
I saw that too. Yeah, I noticed that.
So. You know, he saw, you know, look, again, it's a rookie, even Leno, a second-year guy, you know, making his first run of starts here. There's going to be ups and downs, but, yeah, the Packers, on several plays, you know, maybe even a couple series, you know, they seem to own the trenches, especially with their defensive line.
And by the way, I don't think they're going to make a change. I don't think they should make a change.
No.
Because Vladimir DeCoste has been bad for pretty much the whole season. So if you're going to move Slauson back to center and put DeCoste in there, I'm not sure you're gaining anything.
No, let them grow.
You want your rookie to get better.
Yeah. I mean, he's got to get knocked down, get back up, and get better. I mean, this is, you know, life. This is just football. I mean, football coaches will tell you this all the time. There's going to be lumps and bruises coming his way. You know, if they could manage them like the Bears do pretty effectively, all the better, but let him learn on the job.
And remember, Will Montgomery was supposed to be the center right now. And I know people hate hearing about redshirt years, but I think the idea was to get Hieronis Grissou some time to develop, not get thrown in there as quickly. But if there's one way to get better, it's to be out there on the field. So theoretically, next year, he should be better than he was by sitting out the whole year as a backup.
Yeah, the same is true with Charles Leno. You know, one of the best stories, maybe individual stories of the Bears this season, his ability to hold on that left tackle spot with Jermon Bushrod ailing at one point, and now, you know, the reserve lineman.
By the way, he struggled too.
Leno?
Yeah, Leno, yes, Leno had a tough game in Green Bay. But, let's see, that was his first negative grade. I had him down in 5 games.
He's been good.
So he's been, overall, he's been pretty good. But he did struggle a little bit in that game as well.
Biggest answer.
This is an easy one. The Bears can beat the Packers.
Yeah.
With Aaron Rodgers on the field, which was not something we've seen in a very long time.
He was almost off the field.
He was. He almost got hurt again.
I mean, Tolzien was warming up on the sideline. Local kid.
My favorite quarterback in the
Wisconsin Badgers history.
You know, in the building, you had Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, Jay Cutler. You had all these quarterbacks, and Scott Tolzien's my guy.
Yeah.
He's got to be.
Badgers. Badgers, Badgers, Badgers. My biggest answer is, look, those videos that Christian Jones, Josh Bellamy, Alshon Jeffrey shared, whether on Instagram or Snapchat, look, they love them some Foxy. You know, and Foxy isn't anything like Trestman. He isn't anything like Lovey. Yes, he's a player's coach, but he's got an energy, a youthfulness to him that, you know, he's dancing around to Young Jeezy Win. You know, I don't know what that song is. I had to Google it after Josh Bellamy told me what they were dancing to. But it's – he's winning. Look, the buy-in's apparent, you know, and this is what the Bears needed, and that was the – there's been signs of it, but that was like the best sign yet. I mean, players were picking him up and dancing around in the Lambeau Field locker room. That is something else.
Yeah, it is, and it's – It's funny because when those videos got out, I couldn't help but think back to the press conference after the game where Fox was just so stoic and boring like he usually is. And, it doesn't matter who we were playing, where we were playing. And then you see that video. It's like, yeah, it did.
Yeah,
it totally mattered. Yeah. And that's probably what you were preaching to your team all week, which is fine.
He's got two different messages, what he tells us and what he's preaching in there. And really, the best answers in terms of Fox's philosophy and messages that you're going to get are from the players themselves now.
Biggest concern.
So, I never thought we'd be at this point in the season with this being the biggest conclusion of the year. But what we've seen so far through 11 games is that the defense is good enough to give the Bears a chance to win every week. Mm-hmm. And it's the offense that is the question mark in can they take advantage of it? And then on special teams, it's can they just not screw up enough to cost you the game? That's really what every game is. That's what it's been, and that's what it's going to be, I think, coming down the stretch. The Bears have a chance to win out. I think the defense is going to give them that opportunity in these last five games. The question is, can the offense be consistent enough, and can the special teams not screw up? I don't know the answer to that question. The offense, I think, is it's weird because we give Adam Gase credit, and he deserves it for Jay Cutler's play. Mm-hmm. But this is a unit, and we've been talking about it on this podcast. One week it looks, you know, dominating the Rams, strong fourth quarter against the Chargers, and then the next week it's doing nothing. But it's the Broncos, so you're like, you know, it's a tough defense.
Number
but
one, yeah.
You know, sometimes in Green Bay, that offense was just bad.
Yeah, yeah. I want to, you know, Gase is in charge of coming up with the game plan, but I think, I mean, he alludes to it a couple times, but it's held under. How do I want to phrase this? Fox still has an input on how the offense should be run, how the game is going to be managed. Like, he doesn't want his offense to, one, take too many risks and turn the ball over. So you hear about Cutler being efficient, and Fox has something to do with that. They're not going to throw the ball 40 times a game. Yes, Gase is scheming, and he's coming up with the plays in the offense. You know, he's tailoring every single game, you know, to what his personnel can do against certain matchups, but it's still held under maybe Fox's overall direction for how he wants to run the team overall. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, and I think overall that's a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not always a good thing depending on who your coach is and how it's getting relayed.
Yeah.
But when you have a guy who's clearly respected and, you know, has control over his team the way that John Fox does, that's okay to go in. And that's not something new to have the head coach. And I'm not saying that this even happens, but it's not uncommon to have a head coach at some point in the game. Maybe you have a lead. Maybe you're having some troubles protecting the quarterback. You know, radioing up and say, hey, let's run the football.
Yeah.
And get the heck out of here.
Look at the Detroit game, you know, where he wanted the conservative. That was all. I mean, That was all Fox.
Yeah.
I mean, he admitted as much he wanted to blame for it because those were his. I mean, Adam Gase made the calls, but John Fox told him what to do in a way. But getting back to the original point, I get it. It is kind of a concern because this offense still has some weapons and still has much to prove. And I think injuries have been a concern. But, yes, the offense needs to put up more points because this defense can't hold opponents back, you know, every single week. You need some consistency, even like the Rams game, right? It's not like they were overpowering the Rams, you know, all the way down the field. They had big plays, which are great. You know, great offenses have those, but it wasn't like they were wearing down the Rams and then punching it in like with a 5-yard, you know, quick slant.
And maybe it's harsh of me to say that they were bad. I'm not saying the overall the whole game they actually finished in the red zone a couple times,
The red zone struggles are, I mean,
right. That's been there all season. But what I was trying to say is that at moments in that game, there was some really bad play. I mean, there was some mistakes that were made. Yeah, had a busted play. By the way, heads up moment by Jay Cutler. I didn't really notice it until I watched the film. The what looked like a bootleg was actually a completely busted play that Jay saw as he was supposed to be handing the ball off to the running back. He realized that the entire right side of the line was getting blown up. Kyle Long actually got called for a hold on the play. And instead of handing the ball off and getting his running back killed, Jay just kept it and ran around the side and basically took, you know, no gain instead of a tackle for loss. Now there ended up being a hold on there. But so there's moments like that. And then you have Jeremy Langford dropping a wide open pass when he had like 20 yards to run.
Oh, yeah.
It's plays.
That could have gone for that one over the middle.
Yeah.
That could have been a score.
It could have because when you look at the all 22, there's one safety to beat. There's a lot of room to run. At a minimum, he's going to pick up 20, 25 yards.
Yeah.
Maximum, it could be a score. So they got to be better at times. But it gets back to the point. The defense is going to give this team a chance to win. Can the offense capitalize? That's my biggest concern right now.
I agree.
All right. You mentioned the dancing in the locker room. And I mentioned John Fox downplaying it when he came and talked to us. So let's get to our favorite segment.
What does the fox say?
Sometimes winning can be exciting.
What the fox say?
Way to sell it, Foxy. That was the response to your question.
It was. He almost seemed...
Well, you asked him about the videos.
Right. He almost seemed embarrassed by it. I mean, again, maybe he's not, because what he's telling us is different than usually what he means sometimes. But, I mean, he gave some revealing answers a few times in that interview. I mean, with the Thomas Gafford answer, he praised Tracy Porter. I mean, we were talking about Monday's press conference with him. But, yeah, he seemed a little bashful to talk about being picked up by his players and, you know, kind of dancing with them to Young Jeezy when we should literally repeat.
Well, it's just we're used to it by now, but this idea of there being two John Foxes, this is the best example possible, because you have him come to the podium after the game and just downplay everything. You have him answer your question yesterday about the videos. Well, sometimes winning can be exciting, I guess, you know. I mean, that's his attitude. It's like, oh, but then you see him in the locker room with his players.
Yeah.
And just a completely different guy.
It's actually impressive that he's able to flip a switch that fast.
Right.
You know, that's a pro right there. I mean, that's – who needs – you know, all these guys have PR training, but this guy's been – I mean, he knows how to do it. Some guys are just better at it than others.
Yeah. It's pretty – somewhat entertaining. As much as it is frustrating sometimes with us, it's also entertaining. Let's get to a couple things I have before we talk about this game against the 49ers this week. One, which was Thomas Gafford getting released the other day.
I had never watched – I had gone, he gets released, I go back to the tape, and I watched two games of it. I had never watched snaps so closely.
Yeah, I did the same thing last night.
He wasn't good against Green Bay. He made Pat O'Donnell move, whether he was in his hold or punting, quite a bit. That's not good.
Well, it's one of those things that you don't really notice unless there's a huge problem, like the holder can't handle the snap, or you know the ball sails over the punter's head. But I mean, it shows you the details that are going into this football team right now. If you watch them, they're not horrendous snaps. They're just a couple field goals. Little bit to the outside, a little bit harder for O'Donnell to handle, and he did a great job to get the ball down, kick up. They didn't even have a missed field goal on any of them. But if you watch that weird extra point that Robbie had in Green Bay,
the
knuckleball one, that was one of the snaps where it was kind of outside, not in a great spot for O'Donnell to handle. He got it down, and I imagine that it had something to do with the kick. I went back to Patrick Manley's Twitter feed just to see if he had made any comments on Gafford getting let go or anything like that, and I noticed that during the game he tweeted that there are three parts to a field goal operation, and that's all it said.
Yeah,
but it was like, oh, you know, in retrospect, he's probably talking about the snap.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, if anybody's an expert on snapping, it's Patrick.
I'm certainly not a long snapping expert.
But even like there was Pat O'Donnell didn't have a good night in Green Bay, but one of his worst punts, I forget the yardage, was a snap that was high.
It was like
his
floating.
Right. Yes.
It was like, it wasn't even fast. Yeah. It was like floating up in the air. It almost got blocked.
Right. And it messes up his motions.
Yeah.
He messes up with his head and everything that he works on with his technique. The bad snap affects all that.
And in retrospect, because I was kind of hard on O'Donnell after the Bronco game. And you know what? It's still his job as an NFL punter to get the kickoff and get more than 27 yards.
Yeah.
You know, but now that you kind of see this and you go back and you really closely watch the snaps, which I admit is not one of the things I spend a whole lot of time on after the game, is breaking down the long snaps, you could see that, all right, maybe O'Donnell had a little bit of an excuse for the way that he has performed the last two weeks, which is not good.
Yeah, he said 3 weeks. This has been going on for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So,
one of those small nuances of football that has to be right every time, and it just shows you that When guys, that word accountability we talk about with this regime, there is a ton of accountability, which brings me to the next thing I was going to bring up. Because you know that I keep these grades throughout the season, and I don't really like to talk about them too much on an individual basis from week to week, because admittedly somewhat flawed because I don't know the playbook. I don't know every assignment. But usually when you get kind of a grand look at things, these end up being pretty accurate from what I could tell over the last 3 years when I've done these, just in terms of how a guy's overall played throughout a season. And I noticed this last year at the end of the year, I had 23 players grade out negatively over the course of the entire season. Through 11 games this year, which is not a full season, but 11 games is a large sample size, I only have 13. So right there you're seeing...
Give me a couple.
...the improvement of who... Here, I'll give you the three guys here, because my next point is that of those 13 overall negative grades right now, 10 of those players are either gone or have been demoted in terms of the depth chart or playing time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. For instance, an example like Sherrick McManus wasn't playing well. He's not the nickelback anymore. So there's accountability there.
Right.
Otherwise, let me try to think of who's somebody that's gotten cut because of it. Thomas Gafford's one of them.
Yeah, yeah.
There's an example right there of somebody who has been let go.
How about a guy like Will Sutton? Healthy and active against the Packers. Started 6 of 8 games. Looked pretty good before he hurt his elbow.
Yeah.
His biceps.
I still have him with an overall positive grade, but not by much. Because he was playing pretty well early in the year. Another example, Brock Vereen.
He's gone.
Gone. He's
been with two teams now?
Is he not on the Vikings practice squad?
Is he still with the Vikings?
I don't know. That's the last place I saw him. By the way, Michael Ola starting right tackle for the Lions and apparently playing well.
It's a good story.
I noticed that.
He always had a good story.
Jimmy Clausen was another guy. Small sample size, didn't play all that much, but when he played, he
wasn't
bad.
To do that much. Yeah.
They kept the right quarterback when they had to make a decision there. So, Vladimir Dukas, another guy. So the point here is that there's not only are there less players that are playing poorly, which is probably the biggest take from this, but the guys who are playing poorly, they're being held accountable. They're losing their jobs. So I looked at last year, and those 23 guys that graded out negatively, 16 of them still finished the year with the team. One of them, Roberto Garza, got an extension.
One of the last practices of the year, right?
Now the new regime came in and said goodbye. But
almost immediately.
Because they saw that same tape that everyone else saw. But it's just a totally... A, players are playing better because they're being coached better. B, they're being held accountable, which also gets back to playing better.
Yeah. Why would you not have a sense of accountability with a football team? But you see it all across the league. Some coaches just don't know how to instill it and, you know, control it and do it in effective ways. And you saw it with Mark Trestman the past 2 years. John Fox knows how to do it. It's a good precedent to have. Even if you look at these past 2 weeks, you know, with the Bears playing very well, you know, the Gafford move and the Will Sutton move. Those are, you know, they kind of lost in all the hullabaloo of the Packers win, but those are two messages that still resonate in the locker room that tell players that they have to be better and consistent.
And by the way, one of the guys, because I mentioned there were three guys that have not been demoted or cut. One of those guys is Hronis Grassou, who right now I have graded out negatively, not by a lot, but we talked about him earlier. They're going to continue to try to get him back.
I mean, for a guy like that, it's important to have context.
Absolutely.
He's a rookie.
Absolutely.
Thrown to the fire late.
So, Jim Tom Sula, 49ers.
Is that how you pronounce it? Did I get it wrong?
I don't.
Tom Sula. People do give it an extra vowel.
I think it's Tom Sula. I think I just related him to Pat Tomasulo, though, is what I think I just did that. Has made him his uncle or something like that. But the point is, this regime with the 49ers reminds me so much of Phil Emery, Mark Trestman. It you go back to, like you said, getting in your own way. It's not about being the smartest guy in the room. Jim Harbaugh. Like, how do you mess that up?
I get that Harbaugh has an ego to him. You know, a giant ego to himself, you know.
In the equation has to, too.
Yeah.
If you're going to run a guy that completely flipped around your entire franchise and had a great 4-year run, and really things didn't go south until there's was kind of forced by the guys above him, yeah, at least in my opinion. You run him out of town. Then you have sort of the Bruce Arians, Mark Trestman situation. You hire Adam Gase, or this weird hire that you're trying to be the smartest guy in the room by just promoting Tom Sula. It doesn't make sense. And then, yeah, I understand you have this rash of guys retiring in the offseason, which was weird, but how much that had to do with how the last year played out?
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder.
I mean, you have a sour environment. Why do these players want to stick around if they're, you know, if you're on the fence? Which way are you going to learn? Which way are you going to lean when things are that negative in the locker room and that culture just completely turned and Jim Harbaugh is giving the boot out of the building really in a nasty way where you're leaking stuff to the media left and right? If a player's on a fence about playing, why would you return when you have all that going on?
Here's an interesting note, though, that it's kind of obvious, but I don't think people realize it. The Bears are 1-4 at home this year. That's a bad home record.
Just the Raiders win, right?
Just the Raiders win. You've played some good teams. Lost to the Packers. The
Cardinals.
Lost to the Cardinals. Lost to the Broncos. Lost to the Vikings. Those are four of the best teams in football right now.
Yeah.
So it's somewhat excusable. But you got to win these home games down the stretch. Because you look at the teams that are coming to Soldier Field. The 49ers. The Redskins. The Lions. Those are teams you beat at home.
Yeah.
If you're a good team, if you're serious about being in the playoffs, those are teams you have to beat.
Now, in the past few weeks, I mean, people are saying this is an easy slate. But the Redskins have they've put up some points lately. The Lions, didn't they just beat the Packers at Lambeau?
Yeah.
You know, Megatron is looks like Megatron again.
They've made some changes there that are starting to pay off.
That place is getting cleaned out. I mean, this is just... crazy NFL stuff.
But these are games the Bears are going to be favored.
Yeah.
I think they're a touchdown favorite right now against the 49ers.
Well, I like it by more than that, by the way.
Let's get into that.
Bold predictions.
My bold prediction is that the 49ers don't score an offensive touchdown.
Ooh.
Now, if there's a pick six or special teams decides to do something stupid again, fine. I don't know. Maybe the 49ers will score that way. I don't think the Bears' defense is giving up a touchdown in this game. They're on a streak of, what, 5 out of 6 games? 4 out of 5 where they're only giving up 1 touchdown a game? The Broncos were the only team that scored 2. I think the 49ers, Blaine Gabbert, and this horrible offense, they don't even get in.
Now, Gabbert's been – his numbers aren't bad. They're not – I mean, he's had a couple pass ratings over 90, I believe.
He's Blaine Gabbert.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't do much for me. My bold prediction is, since we were touching on the offense, right? This is finally Jay Cutler's big day. Look, I get that he had good numbers in St. Louis, decent numbers in Detroit, but this is the day where, you know, Adam Gase makes the 49ers regret not picking him, where Jay Cutler goes for 350 yards and 3 touchdowns and just completely torches the San Francisco 49ers.
You said 350?
350 and 3 touchdowns.
Wow, that's big, but I could see it. That's a very bold prediction, actually, because the 49ers defense has been respectable.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Even with all the turnover they've had. All
right, so let's talk about
predictions.
You kind of alluded to it, and I agree with you. And with the 49ers not scoring an offensive touchdown, I got the Bears winning 20-6.
20-6?
I think they win by at least 14 points. That's right where I'm going to put it. And to back this up, on the road this season, the 49ers are losing by an average of 21 points per game.
Oh, they're miserable.
They're a bad team on the road. They're getting blown out on the road. I don't know that the Bears have the firepower to really pile up the score, and I do think the Niners' defense is okay. I don't think they're going to score, though, the 49ers offensively. So I think the Bears win this one comfortably.
See, I do think maybe the 49ers are able to move the ball a little bit. I got them 27-16. Not the 49ers. The Bears over the 49ers. Let's be clear. I mean, but the 49ers will have some offensive success. Maybe you'll see a couple letdown plays, a couple penalties that will just get you so fired up. We got to go through your notes again next week. That just seems to be how the NFL is these days. I think they move the ball a bit. But, yes, Vic Fangio's defense still makes some plays. I think they pretty much... Speaking of putting Aaron Rodgers on his behind, they're going to do that a lot to Gabbert. But, again, with the second game with Matt Forte and Jeremy Langford, Alshon Jeffrey a bit healthier. Mark Mariani may be emerging as not a bad slot guy, at least in some looks.
That's another guy, by the way, I had graded out very highly last week.
Yeah, it's a nice move.
He had three huge clutch third down catches, but he also was very good blocking downfield some of those screens.
He's in a lot of those screen plays since week one. I mean, that's why he plays more than Bellamy, is because he could block better.
I keep seeing these tweets during games, cut him already, and so maybe he's not the best returner of all time. He's been a valuable part of the offense. They're not getting rid of Mark Mariani.
No. They're so thin there anyway, but... Yeah, I mean, again, another guy who emerges who can make a good third down reception. I think it's going to be a long day for the 49ers. I think Jay Cutler has a big day. Again, 27-16 Bears.
All right, let's close up the podcast with a few questions on Twitter. Here's one. Do you think guys like Jonathan Anderson and Bryce Callahan stick with the team next year? Two undrafted rookies that have shown up.
Yeah. Easy. I mean, there's going to be new competition next year. Maybe they'll lose their jobs, but they're your starting points.
That's what I was going to say, because they're going to be under contract. They're coming back. The question is, do they win the jobs? I think that this whole idea of competition that Fox always talks about, it's going to be no different in the offseason.
Now, Callahan, absolutely, yes. He's really solidified himself in nickelback, but go to this Packers game. I think Jonathan Anderson, after a couple impressive plays early on, was given the back seat to Christian Jones again, who got more playing reps as the game got gone on.
Yeah, that was interesting, because I thought Anderson was very good at the beginning. They must have different skill sets that Fangio likes to mix and match with those guys.
Yeah. I mean, the Packers were running the ball out of their three wide receiver sets a lot, but...
Yeah. Here's another one. Do you think the Bears should draft a quarterback in the first three rounds? So many holes on the team, and Jay is playing well.
Guess it depends on their board.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with them still taking a QB early.
Like first round early?
Depends. I mean, if they have a guy really rated highly, I mean, chances are, like, right now their draft pick's number 17, by the way. They're slotted at 17, plenty of time left in the season to move, but they might even move into the 20s to keep winning games. I don't think you're going to get an elite guy there.
No.
But if they really like Connor Cook and he's available in the second round, or Christian Hackenberg, I'm not ready to give up on yet. If he's available in the third and they like him, Ryan Pace saw Christian Hackenberg this year. Maybe
he saw Connor Cook.
Yeah.
His schedule is actually set up nicely to see some of these quarterbacks. Yeah. But
it is weird. So to answer that question, I don't have a problem with it if they still want to.
I just think they have so many other areas to address. And again, with the point and where they're picking in the draft, you're right, could hit the 20s. I mean, you need maybe another cornerback, another safety, another inside linebacker, another outside linebacker, some help on the defensive line, some help on the offensive line, some youth up there. I mean, you go by your board, but there's so many other points of concern for the Bears.
All right, well, let's wrap things up. I think that's a fair point way to look at it. They're gonna go with their top. I mean, whoever's on the draft board, I really think so. I think that's the way they're gonna do it. And so far,
they're not in a position to pick by need yet.
Yeah, early results on them doing that in year one look pretty good. By the way, I saw a story. Where was that? On NFL.com or something. The Bears draft needs, and someone said that they should look for a wide receiver opposite Alshon Jeffrey in the first round. Hello, they drafted Kevin White.
Right.
I was like, what? All right, that'll wrap things up for this week's episode of Intentional Grounding. We snuck a ton in there for 45 minutes or whatever it's been, but big win for the Bears. Now they move into a portion of the season where they're going to be favored and expected to win. It's weird.
You got to handle success now.
Can they do it? It's a fair question. We'll talk to you next week as the Bears and 49ers play on Sunday. We'll see if the Bears can get done what should be a pretty easy win for them. But it's never really easy
in the NFL. It's episode 18 of Intentional Grounding. Again, follow us on Twitter at Adam Hoge, H-O-G-E, at Adam Johns, J-A-H-N-S, WGNRadio.com/Bears, ChicagoSunTimes.com. Find us on iTunes by searching Intentional Grounding and on SoundCloud at SoundCloud.com/WGN Radio Sports. Talk to you next week.